Hello, I'm William English, and this is Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM. For the last 3 weeks, I've been talking with Ed Baxter, the programming director for Resonance. This week, as part of a radical shake-up of this program's format, I'll be talking to Ed Baxter, the programming director of Resonance 104.4 FM. Thanks for coming back on, Ed.
That's right, William. It's easy to walk down the stairs to the studio. In fact, I was in here already.
The week before last, you left me with an inspiring and vivid image of yourself attending a Max Miller appreciation event, accompanied by your three-year-old daughter, Trilby. It's a wonderful name, by the way. At which you waited for Ken Dodd and encountered Dora Bryan, dressed as Max Miller. If I was going to make a film portrait of you, I would choose to shoot this particular scene, I think, with a fixed camera and just let it unfold. It reminded me slightly of a scene from a Humphrey Jennings film.
Right. Do you go on?
Does it ring a bell with you? Where we see a marching band with a drum majorette figure all dressed in satin, in a bleak urban scene up north somewhere, sort of example of English surrealism, perhaps, but very striking in its in the contrasts contained within the image.
Right.
This isn't exactly leading up to a question as such, so you
that's good.
It's.
I thought you were going to say, who was that majorette?
No. Do you think the scene will remain with Trilby? Has she remembered it?
I wonder, because my memories from that age are very few and far between, but they are very vivid. There's only about five of them. So it's very difficult to try and will such things onto, you know, to imprint them on somebody's mind. Maybe if you, you know, took a knife or something, you do that. But even then, I have a scar on my forehead from the age of two, and I don't have a memory of walking into the washhand basin. Although I do have a strange memory of being on top of the bus as we came back from the hospital. So it's hard. It's hard to tell what you remember and what you repress. There are entire episodes of my life that I've tried to forget. But I noticed with my father, who's now 90 and suffers from Alzheimer's, that he has started remembering things that he didn't want to remember. And for a while, maybe a couple of years, this was very distressing to him. Now he's sort of moved into a different phase of mental decay where he can't remember that he said what he said 10 minutes before. So I think if Trilby lives long enough, maybe she'll remember Dora Bryan and Ken Dodd. I wonder what that would be.
I was going to sort of lead on to say, do you have a similar memory? And that perhaps in some way because it's impossible to imagine what a three-year-old child would make of this scene of people like Ken Dodd and Dora Bryan.
I have a memory from when I was a two or three of my grandmother in a silk undergarment, a kind of nighty type affair, I don't know what they'd call them, you know, slip, I suppose, of her standing in front of a mirror, so I see her from behind, and wrapped up in the involute is a kind of fearful memory of the back of a ornate chair in the kind of faux Chinese style, and the chair is, I suppose, in reality, has been moved towards me, probably completely accidentally, but the mental image is of some monstrous tangle of wood brought to life. And these two things are very clear in my mind. I could sort of describe the light in the room and that kind of stuff, but they're very short. They're kind of, it's maybe 2 or 3 seconds of experience, and I had an idea That it was when I was about three again. Why would I be in a cot at three? Maybe I would have done, I don't know. I'm lying down somewhere, presumably in my grandmother's bedroom. But anyway, the kind of payoff line was when I mentioned to my mother that I'd seen my grandmother. Of course, my grandmother had been dead about a year and a half. So whether this was a memory of a memory that I can remember from very early age, or whether it was some sort of hallucination, it's very difficult to pin down. But that's a very early memory, and I have a memory of the texture and colour of a very small amount of wallpaper on the staircase of the house I grew up in for the first 3 years of my life, and a very blurred memory of some people at the gate. But then the trip that we made from Catford to Raynes Park in 1963, I can remember quite a lot of details. The dungarees of the removals men and the arrival at the house, that sort of thing that was, I suppose, very exciting. Some of us travelled in a taxi, which was like probably the only time I travelled in the taxi between the ages of naught and 17, 18, something like that. So it was a very momentous kind of event.
Was your grandmother at all theatrical? Or?
No, I don't think so.
No?
But I didn't really know her in any sense. She wasn't on stage or something.
No. Okay.
She has nothing to do with Dora Bryan or Max Miller.
And right.
Probably be horrified by such creatures.
Really? Quite conservative, then.
I think so, yes. I think my mother's parents were reasonably bourgeois and staid in their tastes.
Right.
It's hard to tell, isn't it? You don't really know anything about them.
Yeah. I remember when I was about five that we had a neighbour opposite who must have been about 70, and he dressed up occasionally as a cowboy and did things with a lariat and six guns. He was, I remember, it was a very, very vivid memory for me at that age,
imagine,
you know.
Yeah.
And we'd just walk across the road and
to
he
gawp.
Would... Yeah, he'd do this thing, you know. He just liked to perform, especially for children, you know.
Right.
So anyway...
Those were the days.
Yes, yes. Simple pleasures.
I have an idea. My grandfather had something to do with Wild Bill Hickok or some one of those Western legends. Ended up doing a circus act in pre First World War, and I think my grandfather had some dealings with these people, and he was he was sort of wrangler or some such thing. But whether that was just for a weekend job or for a year, I don't know. It's one of those things that you're told and then promptly forget.
Okay. One of the impressions I have of you now after these talks is one of a sort of duality, I suppose. I suppose we all have elements of duality, but a combination of esoteric, relatively obscure cultural taste combined with a desire for populism. As though you would like to maybe combine the extremes of experimental music with music hall or musical theatre. Is that fair, or is that completely off the map? I mean, am I sort of...
I have very little interest in music hall or musical theatre.
Really? Oh, right. Yeah. But the idea of radio as a sort of mass media, do you not see it as would you like to have a hit program on Resonance, which broke through to a much wider audience?
I'm interested in taking obscure material to as wide an audience as possible. Yeah, I think music halls perhaps are not the model I would base it on, but evangelical about my own obsessions, for example, partly because the nature of my work doesn't allow me to, really. They're kind of suppressed to some extent. But I am and this is kind of personality problem, I get very bored with what's called mainstream culture. I'm very easily bored. That's probably the problem. I'd like there to be a turnover of experiences rather than a reiteration of the same few. This is why I don't like the Rolling Stones, for example. It's not that they're intrinsically awful, it's just that
they're too popular.
Intrinsically present.
Right. Yeah, so you mentioned them before.
Yeah. Well, I mean, strangely enough, you know, it's like it's a sort of chicken and egg thing.
Yeah.
There, in the last week, as part of my monitoring of other media outlets, I throw away item on the Today programme on Radio 4. They still manage somehow to mention Keith Richards in the in the thing. Yeah, he was completely irrelevant to the article.
Right.
But...
Yeah.
As though it's kind of like some comedy series in which they're paid by Keith to say his name or by his agent. That's it's like it's so much reflex that I'm suspicious of that, actually.
Mm.
I should really be suspicious of my Pavlovian response to this stuff, but we're prisoners of our own neuroses.
Mm. But I suppose, I mean, the business of having a hit programme, for example, just as a sort of shorthand, but, I mean, can that ever be achieved without losing the kudos that goes with marginal art, or do you just see it as a rapidly changing thing that changes so quickly that there's never a possibility of popularity sort of catching up with it, as it were?
Well, I'm not against having hits. If that were possible, I wouldn't kind of pull the plug on them if something really took off, because it would indicate a kind of sea change in the culture, perhaps. No, I don't have any problems with that. I'm sort of slightly dubious as of this project or others, analogous projects being viewed as intrinsically oppositional, which is a phrase I use because somebody from Transmission Gallery wrote to me asking me to take part in a kind of symposium that assumed, in fact stated, that they saw this as an oppositional project, even though it's legal. It's, you know, countenanced by Ofcom, financed by the Arts Council, etc., etc. So I'm slightly dubious about that. What struck me as 1980s discourse, but perhaps that's better than 2008 discourse, which is seems to be extremely degraded and touchy-feely. You're mostly addressed as though you were 7 years old nowadays in the media.
So you don't see Resonance as being oppositional?
Well, not necessarily. No, it doesn't have to be anti-everything.
Yeah. Has it got to the point where it actually cannot be oppositional because it has to be very careful about what it does and says?
Well, it's always had to be careful. You can't just do what you like. That in a structural sense in relation to the content is quite interesting that you're working within rules, and that doesn't really alter the attitude of the people who come to it, either as makers or listeners.
And does it put some people off, though? I mean, are there people who would get involved and who say, well, actually, no, we can't do that because it's too limiting?
Well, there always will be some, but this project isn't as limiting as, for example, the average pirate station, which I think probably have more rules written or unwritten,
right,
more behavioural rules as well, more rules of taste than Resonance does.
Mm.
So that's not
a problem then.
I don't feel the need to problematise this project.
Okay. What are the... there is a sort of fabled steering committee, apparently. Does it steer?
No. The Fabled Steering Committee has long ago been abandoned. The Fabled Steering Committee comprises the three of us who are paid to do the steering.
Right.
And everybody else steers themselves, I hope. We're only steering them into making as good a broadcast as they can, although probably I should be steering you more. Get some oil for that chair, for example. Yeah.
So this is yourself, Richard Thomas.
And Chris Weaver.
Yeah. Okay. And you make the sort of executive decisions between the three of you.
That's what we're paid to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And do you choose all the programs too?
No, I've moved away from that myself. Richard does the content management, and I occasionally come up with a big idea, I suppose, but I've run out of small ideas, I think, and sort of burnt out in terms of trying to manage the entire schedule as a coherent entity, which is actually very complicated and sort of mysterious thing to me even now. But our policy is essentially affirmative, that we respond. Mostly we say yes. That's been my job for the last 6 or 7 years, say yes to people and try and make it work, unless they come and say they have an idea for a show in which they'll play records they bought from a charity shop for 50p. Right. Which is the classic brilliant idea that lots of people have. But, yeah, original ideas are necessary, but also the ability to realise them. You know, I have lots of ideas, but only one or two ever happen, and then extremely slowly. So it's not something that can... There's no necessity about ideas turning to reality, unfortunately.
All right. Quote, William English has been interviewing me recently. I find the results inconclusive and incoherent. A state of intellectual torpor has settled on my brain.
Yes, I put that in so you'd ask me about it.
Did you? Well, I've swallowed the bait.
That's what I was feeding you lines. This is how the media works.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's very, very, very sort of.
It was provocative.
Convoluted and self-indulgent, isn't it? I think.
Does that mean you were disappointed with the sort of content of the interview?
No, I think no. I knew you'd worry about that. I should have added a footnote. I thought of explaining. I was going to explain it last week before our council talk. No, I think at some point in my adult life, I must have thought, I don't know how, that there'd be some kind of coherent body of work or ideas or something that I could point to and say, well, this actually gives an indication of who I am. I'm probably from reading too much F. Scott Fitzgerald in my 20s. And recently... it's not that I'm unself-conscious, but I don't spend very much time reflecting on my own personality for reasons of taste, really. But over the last few weeks, I thought, well, all the stuff I've been feeding you just seems to me extremely fragmented and disconnected. And in fact, my memories of various things are vague and perhaps uninteresting. And then, as I say, I've been tidying my flat for what seems to be like 6 months. Every time I find something, I'm disappointed in it or even distressed by it. Even last night, I found some box of dismal pamphlets and things that were crushingly awful, and I had an idea that I could sell them because they'd be so magnificent and rare. When I looked at them, I just thought, this is such rubbish that I couldn't find the value in them at all, and I put them all back in the box. And
do you not have other days when you look at it again and think, actually, they weren't that bad, they're actually quite
those days seem to have gone at the moment. It's quite, that's what's interesting. Yes, it's all. It's not only is there a kind of intellectual torpor that I mentioned that makes me feel that my brain has shrunk in my head, but it's a kind of inability to enthuse about things that I once thought were. Not necessarily important, but maybe delightful and symptomatic of some something. Well, of energy expended.
I think this is just getting older, you know.
Yeah,
I think so.
No, that's absolutely the case. It's frightful. You know, I'm not. Mm. I don't like being.
You get used to it.
Middle aged. Yeah, I know.
It levels out. You know, it'll be fine, really.
Well, I suddenly understood. Why my parents asked us, me and my siblings, to sort of stop giving them presents, because it's not that you actively hate a certain object or something, it's just that you can't respond to it in any way.
Right.
The porcelain vase is as meaningless as a box of cornflakes, and you sort of have enough, really, I think.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what to say. I'll have to give you a present, which is sort of it's the quality of the presents, isn't it?
There is a
talent to giving presents, you know.
Not.
I mean, there is. I mean, people can be excited by presents at a later age,
right.
Surely.
Yeah, no? I think I was. Must have been drummed into me at an early age. Yeah, but I kind of understood it fully this morning. I sat in the bathroom.
Right.
The revelations I have, you see, are not profound. They're
well, it might be my fault. I mean, it's probably not this. It's probably my. I should have had more of an agenda with these. I mean, I'm quite happy for it to be fragmented because
it is fragmented.
I sort of imagined it would go off at some unforeseen tangent and something might have come out of the talks that we hadn't anticipated and might even have led to some leaping off to the side, which it has to some extent. But I don't see the fragmentation as a negative thing.
No.
I mean, it's probably partly due to my own grasshopper mind, but anyway, before we get to the point where we look at the clock and realize there's about 30 seconds left, I would like to thank you for being so outspoken and talking freely, and hopefully we can do it again sometime.
Well, I'm sure the listeners will want something new next week. Right? By now.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that can be provided. In the remaining few minutes, regarding this thorny problem of fundraising, the art auction is quite an ambitious project. Is there a deadline for this?
Deadline is 2 hours' time, actually, yes.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah, and it's not really going according to plan, so I don't know what to do about that. I was in a blue funk this morning when I woke up, which only really left my system just before you arrived. I was doing a phone interview. I don't know what to do about fundraising. Mm. I really don't. I'm just filling in endless grant applications and writing endless begging letters, but this is not something that is conducive to peace of mind or personal happiness, actually, and it doesn't seem to have the desired effect either, in the sense that I'm not.
Well, let's make an appeal now. If there's any, have you done this already on the air?
No, we should say that anybody wealthy should get in touch.
But it's an art auction. We're looking for bankable artists,
yes.
Not sort of just somebody from the Bayswater Road sending in a painting. No, you want name, least, big name artists.
Yeah, Jack Vetriano or bigger.
Right. Okay, well, we'll see what we can do. But it's only I hope there's longer than 2 hours, otherwise we've had it. But the idea is that these named artists, if there's any named artists out there listening, that they should commit themselves to
donating a print,
a drawing, a book, something that might be worth a few £100 at least, that you can put into an auction.
Yes,
which will
be in October
at
Bonhams.
But why is the deadline so close?
Well, it's the auctions house, this deadline.
They need to know.
They need to know today if we're to go ahead with it. So it's
well, that's a tall order. We might have
to... But it is, but, you know, it can... things can always be postponed. The only thing that can't be postponed is the paying of bills, of course.
Which, right.
It's always difficult.
How many people have you got for the auction?
So far?
Yeah.
You put me on the spot here, will you?
Well, roughly.
Three.
Three.
Roughly three.
Okay.
I need roughly...
20.
12, 20.
12 or 20. Mm. Okay. Well, I was quite... I mean, I can do a bit of lobbying on your behalf, but not within the next 2 hours. That's too bad. Well, that's going to be too much.
We'll talk about it off air.
All right.
Yes. Now we've made our appeal to the great and the good.
Yes. Okay. I think I saw a picture of you once wearing a long-sleeved Resonance T-shirt. Do these things exist? Or is it like a sweatshirt that says...
they can exist.
They can exist. Yes. Is it like a sweatshirt rather than a T-shirt?
You can have a sweatshirt if you wanted one.
Really?
Yes.
With any one of the slogans on it?
Yep.
Right. I thought it was only you that had one, you see. A bit like sort of...
Or maybe it's only me that wears one.
Okay. As you can tell, I'm actually running out of questions.
Yeah, that's an obscure enough question. Do you want to know what colour socks I'm wearing?
Well, they're black, aren't they? With red Converse shoes.
They're going in the bin, I tell you, as soon as humanly possible. I only put them on to force myself to buy some other shoes. They don't fit, is one thing. And they're falling apart inside and they smell. Apart from that, they're perfectly acceptable footwear.
All right. Well, next week's programme, I think... will probably be an interview with the two owners of Ultima Thule, which is a little record shop, you might know it, in Leicester.
Oh, yes. Aren't they brothers?
That's right. Freeman.
Yes.
Alan and Steve Freeman, who run it. It's an amazing little shop, actually. When you come out of London Road Station in Leicester, it's just around the corner there.
And it's been going for donkeys here.
Yes. Yeah. And I managed to do an interview with them about... I don't know, a month ago, and it's been sort of delayed. I keep meaning to.
And has their operation, has a popular taste caught up with them, as it were? Because 25 years ago, where it was, it seemed like they were an outpost for a progressive rock revival that didn't happen. But maybe now it has.
It's still very much sort of kraut rock and so on, but also... includes Leicester groups like Volcano the Bear, and also the Freeman Brothers themselves play in about five or six different configurations. You know, they've got a different name for each outfit. So hopefully that interview will be broadcast next week.
Excellent.
So thank you very much again to Ed Baxter.
Thank you for having me.
What do we play out on? What's next?
I think what happens is you pull the vocal faders down, and then we put on a jingle, and then there's another show.
Thank you.
The home of radio art in the UK, rupturing the airwaves across London and over the web from ResonanceFM.com.
Hello and welcome to Drift Shift number 10. This is 15 minutes of sound and text. I hope you enjoy, but don't relax.